Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe. And this is about the EU days. And this is for the 5th of March. And that's the European Precast Day. Now you will ask me, where is Precast and what is Precast? Precast is a village in Kosovo. And it's the site of the location of a terrible massacre, which took place on the 5th of March in the year 98. And it's in general seen as the one of the most terrible, and I think the most terrible massacre of the Serbian terrorist police. And they are not the anti-terror police, but the terrorist police. And they have attacked at that time, that day on the 5th of March, a village called Prekaz, and killed the family and himself, Adem Yashari. Adem Yashari is seen as the founder and first leader of the UCK, the Kosovo Liberation Army. And when you ever fly to Pristina, you will see that his photo everywhere, and also at the airport. It's the Adem Yashari Airport. It's named in his honor. And he is one of the key personalities of the Kosovo independence struggle. And he and his family was killed on the 5th of March in that terrible massacre by the Serb terrorist regime, I would call it at that time. You can already call it a terror regime because they have committed already so much terror in Bosnia, in Croatia, in Slovenia during the wars from 91 to 95. And then there was a certain pause from 95 to 98, and then they were banned for also changing the ethnic balance in Kosovo, and they wanted to take full control and to subdue all the resistance in Kosovo. And that was, of course, done by terrible means. Let me describe you the events of the day. It was basically spring or still a winter day. That's a very hilly region. I was personally there. It's about, you know, in Austria, you would call it the Mühlviertel in the Bavarian mountains. This is this typical kind of, it's not an alpine area. It's not an area with huge mountains. It's this kind of mid-level, it's quite common this in Europe, you have these regions. It's difficult to access, you have small-scale farming there, there is not a significant industry, and the main livelihood for centuries was basically farming of pepper and of tomatoes, some small-scale farming. It's a very poor region. It's always the Serbian state has never really taken strong control of that region because it was always inhabited by Albanians. They were never happy with the genocide committed against them in 1912. And who is really happy with genocide? And in all phases, the Serbian power from 1912 to also then during the World War One. Then after the World War One, and basically in also during World War Two, and then in the phases when Yugoslavia took stronger control under in the first phase of Tito until 65, and this was an area they had little direct control of, and always the people really didn't like to be there in anything like Yugoslavia. On the day. You know, there's always various aspects to be said. The idea that there was a real organized UCK at that time, I would refute that. And to call him the legendary leader of the UCK is also describing the level of organization of the UCK is too high. It is basically a farming community. People were obviously armed. But let me come also to that aspect because it matters very much. They were armed on the level of technology of the Second World War because they had maybe some hunting rifles at that stage, but they had no kind of major access to weapon. the real kind of access to weapon came with the Albanian Revolution of 97. And suddenly a lot of World War II material, which, because Albania didn't have in 97 any kind of meaningful modern military equipment. They ran out of money from the beginning. They never had a lot of money. So what they basically had were some leftover partisan or some kind of surplus supply of the Soviet Union or of China from the years of their respective cooperation, but they always got the worst and the oldest stuff, and they never had money for anything new. So in 97, the market basically was flooded with old equipment, and much of it went also towards Kosovo over time. But I think it didn't reach the Yasharis in any kind of meaningful form. What was happening, obviously, was this kind of small scale, you can describe it terrorist, but this was kind of small scale provocation by some elements of the Kosovo Albanian resistance. They were already happening in 97, and they were also the reason, how can I describe it also? You know, there was some attacks on Serb occupation forces. That means basically Serb policemen or police stations. And mainly it was throwing hand grenades in the night into these compounds. And the real death toll of that and the effectiveness was minimal. And it's also, you know, in the retrospect, always each side tries to minimize its own kind of violent level and kind of build a myth about their own kind of contribution at that time. But we have to see that the Yugoslavian army, in general, what they really had was a relatively well-equipped army of the standards of the 1970s. Also, Yugoslavia ran out of money completely, if it ever had a lot, in the 1980s. But in the 1970s, they had still a lot of supplies, and they had also their own defense production, and they had a relatively well-equipped army of the level of the 1970s. That is what they had. They didn't have a lot of new equipment as well. But you can make a lot of damage and a lot of brutality also with World War II equipment. And you can do a lot of damage as well with the 1970s stuff. And here we come to this brutal day and the confrontation and what happened. Basically, Milosevic was banned to quell any kind of resistance. And he wanted to do what in World War II the Nazis have done often, but also other occupation powers have done. It's called a reprisal, putting exemplary violence in order to intimidate potential resistance. So the idea of the day was we go in hard, the Yugoslavian terrorist police, and we show everybody that we are very serious. We basically quell the resistance of this kind of symbolic leader, because, again, it was not that the UCK at that stage was any kind of significant military force. It actually never was one. And that has also to be explained. I will talk about it soon. But the point is, at this stage, the idea was to move in and to basically make a symbol that all resistance is futile. So they sent the same guy. He is famous in infamous, notorious in the history of the Balkans. This person with the nickname, that's the most, I don't bother you with all the names, it's Legia. He was the man who shot 3 years, 4 years later, 5 years later, in 2003, he shot the Serb prime minister. So he was a man who himself basically pulled the trigger to shoot commander of this troop who has killed his own prime minister, Mr. Cinčić, in 2003 on the notorious day of the 12th of March. On the 5th of March in 98, he was the commander of that troop, and that's why I also call it a terrorist group, because that was a terrorist, a state terror group. It was meant for that. That was the idea. They went in to strike terror in the heart of the Albanians, who they knew had now a bit more access to weapons. And after the situation of Dayton, where basically the Americans in many ways have saved the Bosnian Serbs, yeah, with this compromise peace of Holbrooke in 95, they knew that the confrontation in Kosovo was inevitable one day. And obviously all sides were thinking when. And in the spring of 1998, the Serbs made their move. They came first in January. They understood the situation completely, and they came back at the beginning of March, and they came back heavily, because they basically, instead of, for example, imprisoning Adem Jašari or trying to somehow capture him alive, no, they went in with artillery and tanks, and then they shelled his village. I mean, this is not a police action. I want to reiterate the dynamics. These are poor farmers with some kind of improvised weapons, but in no way they had any kind of military possibility. Military possibility, I call, you have mortar, you have artillery, you have some kind of vehicles, yeah. You have, I'm not talking about air power or something like this, yeah. You have some kind of stuff when you are an army, otherwise what are you? So the situation, the Jašaris had Kalashnikovs, yeah. Basically they had these old Kalashnikovs, and they were, of course, ready to defend themselves because they are farmers. The theory that they have fully self-sacrificed themselves is also, you know, very questionable, because what you should have done, you know, when you leave your land, what you live from then? You know, you starve. Yeah? When you leave your house, where do you live? You know, these are farmers who are connected to the land since centuries. Yeah? And they have lived there forever. They are the traditional people in that village, in Prikaz. And so on this day, the commanders, and there were all these famous names of the people later ending in Den Haag, and deservedly so, or in front of the... because they were mainly then basically punished for the killing of their own prime minister in 2003. But these were people, also do not forget where they came from, these terrorist groups. They were all steeled and blooded in the Bosnian, Croatian and Slovenian war. They were the people, the same perpetrators of Vukovar, of Srebrenica, of also Prekaz. They were used to kill and to spill blood. They had no mercy, and they used their military force, and the Serb terrorist military, 1970s technology, you know, with artillery, and they basically shelled this farming house into submission. I have personally been there as well, and this is a typical kind of a brick and mortar building. It's not a very big farming house, but for the standards of the region, that's one of the bigger ones. Yeah? But you have to imagine it as a very poor and very, you know, there was no defensive fortifications in a sense. It is not a fort or a military installation. This is a private house. You can find hundreds and thousands in the Balkans, yeah, basically self-built by the family. And, you know, it's not a military installation. Huh? And just to make that very clear. And the poor people of all generations, grandfathers and children, they were living in that two, three houses. It's a small kind of settlement, in a way, of that family, always extended for each family to have a living room. And then you shell it with your state army. Huh? And what kind of help they could expect? Nobody was helping them, yeah. You know, because the state was basically bent to kill them. And that's, I think, the situation as it is best described. It is a similar thing like you have it in Chechnya or in other war crimes. And it's basically a war crime if the state, with the care protection, obviously the state has also to keep public order. So somebody who does guerrilla activity obviously has to be reprehended and has to be caught. Yeah? It has to be brought to justice. Yeah? But let's never forget that the whole thing was from the year 91 already very clear, because in 91 the independence of Kosovo was clear. It was a referendum, and it was a declaration of independence in 91, together with Macedonia, together with Croatia. But to the West's great fault, we have not recognized the independence of Kosovo in 91, and all the events which took later place, and also this terrible day of the 5th of March, would have been completely avoidable by better informed Western policy making on ex-Yugoslavia. And it was, I think, quite clear from that stage that Kosovo people, the majority, by far, there was 1 million votes for independence. And they were not going into that kind of Serbian state. And we could have avoided all the bloodshed of 89, 98, and also of 99, and all the war and all the consequences with better policy. You know, it's a tragedy. Anyhow, and what the Serb terrorist police did then on the 5th of March was basically shelling this family. It's all over 57 people or 59 people. I was personally there. You can see white marble graves. It's a very nice and very touching memorial now. And the Kosovo state has made great effort also to document this crime and also to honor the victims. Because children from the youngest age, they were basically dying by this so-called police action. But as I have said in many of my podcasts, the term police and the term terrorist has always to be seen in the context of the reality. You know, you can call anybody police, but this was not a police in our sense, where we have this idea of somebody helping you and somebody supporting you. No, these were extremists. These were terrorists. They were state-sanctioned terrorists, like we have it also in Iran and in this kind of regimes, where they commit terror against their own population for political purposes. And they have done that to the most extreme against the Bosnians. But also, never forget, these are the same people who killed their own prime minister 5 years later. So they killed this family, and it's a very sad day. I recommend everybody to go, and I recommend everybody to honor these victims, and always to see that states have no right to use military means against their own population. This has basically been also the case of Assad. And you know, you can compare Milosevic quite well with Assad. I think he is this kind of person, and also with others of these perpetrators of state terror in the history of Europe and the world. And it's very sad. No, and this was obviously then the start of the Kosovo Liberation War. In many ways, it was the crystallization point, because such kind of terrible brutality against innocent civilians, obviously they have repercussions, because it's crystallizing for the community. That means that everybody who was until then not for armed resistance, because the Kosovo society was very much divided. You have to understand that the LDK, and this is Rugova's party, and Ibrahim Rugova, who was the father of the first independence and also of the Kosovo state, very much the symbolic leader, he was always very constrained and calling for restraint, because he didn't want the man be the man in going down in history for the end of his people. Because he saw what kind of level of violence Milosevic is ready in the Bosnian War. And he didn't want to call for war when he doesn't have international support and no weapons. I understand the Croatians, and also to some extent the Bosnians, they had American backing, and they had the access through the Adriatic Sea. The Albanians at that stage didn't have any American backing. There was no sophisticated American weaponry in the UÇK. And this maybe was then a little bit better in the April 99, when basically the NATO war was already, maybe only in May, but this was never any way decisive. And the Albanians in the 90s, they were out of their own institutions. The Serbs basically built an apartheid regime. They had to live from subsidies from their friends and Albanians working in Switzerland, Austria, and Germany and Italy, sending money back. There was not a lot of international support for them, and there was certainly no kind of sophisticated weaponry, and there was no support. They were alone, and Rugova knew it very well, the international situation, and he basically called for restraint. And then Adem Yashari and others, they were, of course, they were for self-defense, and they also wanted to have a more armed struggle against it. But until 98, this was minimal because simply there was no arms. What you do when you have an armed state who is committing terror acts and you are just a farmer or a student, you can protest, but you have just stones and maybe some hunting rifles. Yeah? There was no way this was a winning match, and it would have been a massacre. And it was a massacre on the 5th of March and on many other days. Yeah. I will not make a podcast about each and every massacre which the Serb terrorist forces have committed, because it was Prekaz which was the most decisive one and also the crystallizing one. And then, obviously, with the news of that kind of brutality against the Yashari family, obviously, then a lot of young people in Kosovo and in Albania and in the Kosovo-Albanian community in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, Italy, they decided that it is now time to take up arms. And they had some arms and they were gradually getting better organized. But it was also the whole time still so that the Yugoslavian army was by a multiple of 100 better organized, better structured, and obviously better armed by it was no comparison. And this kind of struggle between the people with a realistic view of the power relation between Yugoslavia and Serbia and the Kosovo reality of having no means to defend yourself, that was, of course, then shifting towards the people who wanted to have military violence as tools to gain independence. And that's basically the founding moment of the UÇK, is also the Prekaz massacre. So the whole strategy of Milosevic to subdue and strike terror in the heart of the Albanians and creating so many deaths in order to subdue them was also backfiring fully, because that's basically the real founding moment of the UÇK and the terrorist attack by the Legia and his FACS, his kind of criminal band sanctioned by the Yugoslavian state, has led to the rise of the PDK and attached to it in the UÇK and all these personalities which are now also famous, like the former president Facci, and they only came into the picture after the Prekaz massacre. So it's really a terror attack and a terrible day. I'm talking, when you once go there, I recommend it whenever you're in Kosovo, you have to visit this memorial, because it's a memorial also bigger than just for Kosovo or for a particular line of thinking in the Kosovo armed resistance struggle. It's also about the whole Europe, because that's why I call it a European Prekaz, because it is what Europe is made against. Because we had so many of these massacres against civilians by the Nazi forces in World War II, and especially in the Balkans, and the German army led by the Nazis and the Wehrmacht itself has committed so many terrible reprisal actions and example kind of, this is exactly the method. We have built Europe and NATO against regimes which do this kind of things. Yeah? And in guerrilla situations where the population is hostile, for military leaders, that's maybe often a temptation to go into villages and shoot everybody. Also, the American army, even in Vietnam, has done it in some terrible incidences, yeah. And I know that, some say, oh, that's maybe deserved. You should, they have been harboring terrorists, or they are terrorists themselves. But we in Europe, and I think the European Union, NATO, we are exactly made in order not to have this kind of terrible conflicts escalating to this kind of level of violence. We should build a peace order based on reason, based on judgment and real knowledge, and also to avoid that this kind of fighting it out in the streets and villages of some hilly regions. We could have been wiser. And my approach to the international community is the following. Again and again, I say it. But in 1991, Mr. Rugova, he led his people to peaceful breakaway from Yugoslavia. It was very much the same like in Gligorov in Macedonia. It was the same like in Slovenia and in Croatia. Actually, there was little violence in 91 at that moment. There was some violence from the Serbian state. But the whole operation could have been totally peaceful. All the disasters with its geostrategic consequences and all these kind of crimes of 89 and 99 could have all been avoided by better policy. So when you think about the 5th of March, always think that when we in the West are too lazy to read the history of regions, when we are too easy to believe propaganda of Kosovo, which was always Serb, I can guarantee you Kosovo was never the Serbian in any meaningful sense. It was anyhow the last 500 years, and that's a meaningful period. It was dominated by the Ottoman Turks, yeah? And before it, it was a Byzantine area, and there were the Illyrians living there. And of course, it was a mixed population of all kind of people. But the idea that it was ever a historic Serb region, it's so prevailing, I really cannot believe it. I don't understand that even in the peace conference in 1919 in Paris, and also then later, this has been such a persistent kind of, it's only based in some Byzantine monasteries, which are beautiful. I've been in all of them, from Prizren to Dečan to Pristina and Gračanica, and they are very beautiful. But these are the legacy of the Byzantine Empire. And the Byzantine Empire, you can call it the Greek Empire, you can call it the Roman Empire. The Byzantinians actually always called themselves Romans, and they were not based on any ethnicity. They were speaking Greek, and they were calling them Romans, and all the people of the Balkans were part of their imperial system. And obviously, they built monastery everywhere. And then, in a very short period, it was when the Byzantine Empire fell, there was splintering in various groups by local rulers. But this is in no way to be said, as Milosevic has always said, that Kosovo is the heart of Serbia. And this was never historically, in any period, the case. It was Byzantinian and then Ottoman. And before it was Roman. When before the Roman division, and all these historic artifacts and religious monasteries, and they are from this Byzantinian inheritance. And there was never a Serb majority living in Kosovo, and I think that we have somehow started to believe this narrative. And also a lack of care of policymakers in this decisive year of 1990 and 91. But we have recognized Macedonia, Croatia, Slovenia, Bosnia. We all knew that it will be complicated. but we made a historic and tragic mistake not to support Rugova's independent First Republic in 91. And then it all came down so hard on the people of Prekaz, on this family, on the 59 dead. And, you know, go not only to honor that family, and it's in no way meant to honor the UCK or the armed revolution. Also, I respect people who fight for their freedom, no doubt. But go there to also repent the sin of European policymakers' failures in 91 and the consequences of bad policy. Bad policy based on lack of information and lack of care and lack of courage, believing somebody's narrative of genocidal kind of ethnic cleansing is leading to exactly that. And we, as European policymakers, policy elite, people who think about that, we should be better than that. We have this moral obligation to read, to learn, to understand. We have this moral obligation to care. And we had then to avoid, actually, that we have to use military force like we had to do then in 99. And I recommend this documentary for all interested in more details. I will talk about it a lot, but it's the Road to Kosovo Genocide. It's on YouTube. You can see it. It's very detailed with the witness and video footage of the events and of the actors as it happened. And exactly, you know, we had anyhow, because of our failure of 91, we had to come back then in 99. And it was very complicated because the West really didn't want to do this war. Ultimately, we did it in order to protect the Albanian residents at that time in this country from the violent ethnic cleansing and genocide of Milosevic. And it was the right thing to do. But in the retrospect, always think about, with better policy in 91, recognition of Kosovo from that moment onwards, we could have saved so many lives. So if you are in a position to think about peace and war and about policy, we have to be from the beginning better informed, and we should have recognized the First Republic, and so many people would live, so much treasure and blood would have not been wasted, and it could have been a much better Balkans from the start. So anyhow, it's good that we have and this independent Kosovo today. It's working very well, by the way. And I will also talk about the new Pristina and the new Prekaz. But in the every 5th of March, I recommend to spend a moment to listen to this podcast, to honor the victims, to never forget their sacrifice, and also to think about European policy making, our weaknesses in information, in leadership, and in also decision-making, leading then to ourselves having to go to war to correct our own weaknesses. And wouldn't it be better to have better policy from the start? And so many people could live happy lives if we did. So, thanks a lot for listening. Remember, Prekaz, the European Prekaz Day, the 5th of March. Always think about the victims and also and the terrible deeds committed on that day, but also think about European policy making to be better, wiser, fairer, and also more courageous from the start. Thanks a lot for listening.